As we stay in place, we're giving you sports. The Sports Station, 104.5 The Zone.
Glad you're with us. Midday 180, queued up by Edley's Barbecue. Always great when we're joined by Stephen Godfrey of Banner Society. You can follow him on Twitter at 38Godfrey. Podcast ain't played nobody. Godfrey, it's Friday. Good to see you, man. Hope you're doing well.
I'm good. How are you?
We are excellent and excited as we get to phase two of reopening the state. And today I know the SEC is taking a look at reopening campuses for players to join. Other universities have already made that decision. The NCAA has talked about this issue now. Your thoughts on just finally seeing a plan in place and hoping that we have college football, NFL, and high school football down the road?
Yeah, on a personal level in Nashville, I'm very excited that my gym might open so I can eat a carbohydrate again, maybe in my life. I think this is as close to a universal step forward as we've seen. I feel like every week we come on here and we kind of talk about clusters of ideas in terms of like it's all been geographic, right? The West Coast feels alienated from what the Heartland's doing, and the South feels like we're getting closer and a little bit more cohesive. I know a lot of people have questions about the state of Washington and Oregon and California. I wish I could tell you that I think that they're going to fall into lockstep. I don't forecast that happening. But if you take a leap of logic with me, I also don't think we're going to have to cancel USC, Alabama, and Texas come September, at least not yet.
Godfrey with us. I'm curious, there's the discussion that, you know, I'm paying attention to because I'm an MTSU fan here. Conference realignment for conferences like Conference USA and the Sun Belt. Is this a solution to saving whatever they can fiscally to realign and go regionally and combine those two conferences and just play the conference slate that way? Have you heard of further measures that reemphasize this model from other conferences? How are they going about saving money and travel expense and everything else if they're going to potentially lose, and they have to plan for this, potentially lose some of these payday games and only go to their conference matchups, which don't bring in much revenue for those games?
Okay, so there's a couple of things here. Yep. Let me start by saying this. One of the things that I've grown really, really aggressive towards is this idea that a problem was created by COVID. I think what COVID does, this is my talking point on COVID for everything in life. I don't care if it's healthcare, retirement homes, college sports. COVID came about and basically exposed the stress points of any infrastructure, okay? So if an economic model, a healthcare system, a university system had weak points, what this pandemic has done has exposed those weak points. So let's start with Conference USA and Sun Belt real fast. Conference USA has been in a bad spot for a very long time. And a lot of people have talked about this a little bit publicly, mainly privately, that this conference has lacked any kind of distinguishing feature in order to sell itself as a commodity in the television market. I mean, you know that they had games on BN, which is what, a German soccer channel, a couple years ago. This has always been a patchwork rights deal. This is not something that we're used to in college sports, where your inventory is sold to usually one of three major corporations. So this problem has always been there.
The biggest issue I had with MTSU joining Conference USA, here's what happened. They joined Conference USA, and then the reason for joining Conference USA then realigned with other conferences. You had Memphis that left and all these other schools that left. And so Conference USA just became the new Sun Belt. They picked up Sun Belt schools, and then the Sun Belt schools realigned themselves as well. So that was my biggest issue with it. They just changed conference names. They didn't actually change it. I understand the TV deals maybe got a bigger bump in pay, but not that much. They cut the TV deals the realignment.
I push back on that a lot because I got into this argument with some people I won't name publicly that are current athletic directors, that I think MTSU and Western Kentucky specifically hurt themselves. I really do. I think it was a marginal increase in revenue at best, and it wasn't even – I mean, it was we're talking about issues of – I think it was what was promised and projected at the time and not even the money they've actually seen since.
Well, it was the TV deal. It was the TV. Right. So that when you had the markets that they had in the original Conference USA that – Middle joined, the TV deal was around $1 million per program, and it dropped to like 300 grand after some of these teams left.
If you're listening to this, I don't want to go to like 300 level course here. What we're talking about here is something called grant of rights. Okay. And so what grant of rights means is that if South Carolina or Tennessee or Ole Miss were to leave the Southeastern Conference tomorrow, they could do that. They never would. But if they decided, hey, we're going to join the Atlantic Coast Conference, we're going to join the Big 12, they have signed something called grant of rights, which basically means for, I think it's 7 or 8 more years, if you were to leave a major conference, your money that you make in television goes back to that conference. The reason they did this was to create stability. And the Big 12 was the one who started all this because they were really worried about the Big 12 falling apart when it receded to 10 teams. What the sub-conferences lack, the G5, is that cohesiveness. And basically, in other words, a way to say, hey, you can jump if you want to. We're going to keep your money. It's been such a free-for-all that you're exactly right. The conference they committed to is not the conference they ended up being. However, I think they were also lapped by the Sun Belt, which did sort of this bargain basement kind of marketing towards programs that made sense together. You know, I can tell you firsthand, I grew up a Georgia Southern fan because that's where my parents went to college. That fan base is strong and fervent. They have a great rivalry with Georgia State, Louisiana Monroe, Louisiana Lafayette. You go through the Sun Belt, it's a very small, compact, sensibly organized conference that can rely on gate revenue. I'm not saying they make a ton of money. Conference USA looks like a catch-all. It looks like what's left over when you're picking teams. And the problem with that is, I'm not saying this to disparage the quality of these programs. Marshall is a phenomenal football program. It always has been. It's always been an outlier program. Southern Miss. I mean, I covered Southern Miss a long time ago. A stalwart sort of G5. They kind of invented the Boise State methodology. They just haven't put it all together. There is no cohesiveness at all, and they cannot continue. So to answer the COVID question, now if they start losing what little revenue streams they have, there will be no Conference USA very, very soon.
Well, and that may be a good thing, because if they do the realignment, that you're talking about, and then the structure of what the Sun Belt was or is, The East in this realignment with the two combinations would include MTSU, Western Kentucky, Georgia Southern, Georgia State, Troy. I mean, the regional matchups that you're discussing there.
Well, and I think that's what plays into it the most, is I think when you get to this level of college football, and I'm not saying that disparagingly, I love the Group of Five, I do, but you have to make decisions that are not based. First off, there's no television market interest here. This is not how that works. Okay, when you're talking about pro, have you ever been to Troy, Alabama? Not a television market. Okay,
yes. You're right.
Not a television market. Neil Brown once told me, he was like, I had to tamper down the excitement in the program when we got a Publix. Like, people were going to Publix more than once a day.
Was it Papa John's that was on their stadium? Well, who was down there?
They were Troy? Okay. All right. This is a 90s throwback. Are you guys ready? Do you remember Movie Gallery?
Oh, yeah.
Do you remember? It was sort of the bargain answer to Blockbuster. That person, individual who started Movie Gallery, went to Troy. And at one point, they had they were like Dollar General. They had hundreds of locations, and they were Movie Gallery Stadium. That's a true story.
Paul, when we come back.
Yeah.
When we come back, Paul, you're going to get into, there has to be a better solution than just these mega contracts to prop up the athletic departments by playing these out-of-conference games and the big money games across college.
Yeah, Godfrey said COVID exposed the stress points. I think this is a big stress point. So these cupcake games that I hate serve to finance these quote unquote lesser programs. It would seem to me a good time for college football overall to assess a better way for these other programs to survive without having to go to the slaughterhouse. We'll discuss that next.
Midday 180 queued up by Edley's Barbecue, 104.5 The Zone.
Wake Up Zone breaks down Tennessee athletics with Brent Hubbs, presented by Gary Ashton of Remax Advantage. Wednesday mornings at 8:15 on 104.5 The Zone.
Godfrey with us. It's on the Midday 180, queued up by Edley's Barbecue. The podcast Ain't Played Nobody. And, of course, Banner Society is where you can read his work. Paul, we're looking big picture here on solutions to these big contract payday games.
So I guess a lot of people don't see it as a problem. But, you know, these small non-Power 5 schools, small budget non-Power 5 schools need the payday. It finances their entire program, their entire athletic program, maybe, to come or play a big powerhouse and a cupcake game. And they get the big dollars and they go home, usually swallowing a big loss, but getting a big payday. Those games are in jeopardy now, and that's going to kill schools like UMass or whoever else. There are tons of examples. I'm against those games from the start, but is that the best way for these schools to finance themselves now at a time where we could step back and look at these systems that you're talking about? Or is there some kind of revenue sharing or something that's healthier for the sport that would give us the same result?
I think it's a couple of things. I think the first thing is that we're addicted to the system. We don't know it yet because the revenue – I mean, first off, the contracts for these games stretch until 2030. I mean, even the quote-unquote cupcake games. So we can't just necessarily break it off right away. I've said this on the show before. The other underlying problem is that most of these networks are striving for inventory. Okay, it's not quality. So in other words, like if I get an extra Alabama football game and they're beating up on Akron, it doesn't matter. That's 3 hours that I get to sell advertising against. So those parties involved need to understand that they're perpetuating this cycle. I also think, you know, Paul, you can speak to this. The New York is a much larger market than Nashville, right? The salary cap for the roster of the Jets is the same as the salary cap for the roster of the Titans. Okay, they are essentially the same functional entities when you talk about competitive advantage with personnel. Only in this sport do we try and pretend that New Mexico State and Florida State are on equal footing. So if we're talking about serious reform here or even giving these schools a fair shake, I think the first thing that we have to do is create a division. We have to go ahead and break down and say, look, this is not sensical that 95, $120 million budgeted schools are occupying the same competitive space as some of these schools who are living and dying on $1.5 million check for these cupcake games. No other sport that I can think of operates like this.
And just you used New Mexico State, independent program. They're set to earn $2.7 million in games against UCLA and Florida. Kent State, just to give more examples, just say $5 million. They're going to get $5 million of their athletic budget for games against Penn State, Alabama, and Kentucky this upcoming season. So three That's of their games brutal. On their slate go $5 million towards their budget. And then Bowling Green, who's already dropped baseball, the Falcons have road trips to Ohio State and Illinois, and they're going to make $2.2 million through their football program going to play those teams. The total for this year is 39 major college football schools have scheduled a total of 49 bye games, and it's worth around $65 million for those 49 bye games. And that $65 million funds those 49 other teams that are out there looking to play to simply keep their athletic program propped up. If you have to cut those games, then what do you do? I mean, it seems like the non-Power 5 schools, Godfrey, are asking for permission to drop conference games so they can schedule more pay games. And meanwhile, if they had to cut games, we know the Power 5 would keep the conference games and then cut the payday games.
Yeah, but also it's disingenuous because these athletic directors at these group of five schools are not thinking about – I'm just going to be really mean for a second. Not all of them are thinking about what's best for that university at a moment in time. One of the horrible toxic parts of the entire college sports culture is it's always upward mobility. It's always a bunch of strivers. And what I mean by that is that these people at Kent State, and I know that head coach, and he puts on a brave face about having to play three or four of these games where they just get shellacked. But you can understand the psychology there. These administrators at these MAC schools and, you know, these independents like New Mexico State and UMass Amherst, who have no business being in the FBS right now, they won't drop anything. They're using that as a threat. Oh, guys, if you don't let us go get our butts kicked by Auburn, we've got to drop the swim team. I guess you hate the swim team. Look, the reality is nobody wants to be in charge of an economic revision where you come away with less, even though that's probably what's best for a lot of these universities. They're not going to say that. You know why? Because they're trying to be the next athletic director at Marshall, and then they're the next athletic director at South Carolina, and then they get to a $100 million budgeted school. That's the problem.
The large school example is Notre Dame, because they have the five-game yeah. schedule with ACC, but then the rest are these traditional rivalries that they keep with USC, Stanford, Navy. I mean, in looking at that, I'm wondering, okay, if you had to cut games, what happens to Notre Dame football with the conference and ACC, and that's it? They're going to be fine.
Yeah, they're,
but my
they're,
point
they're
is the revenue bringing in, if the average big school brings in $10 to $12 million per home game, that's a huge cut.
Yeah, and the problem is it doesn't benefit. There is no solution that creates immediate benefit for all parties involved, and that is the inherent problem. You have to take – if everyone involved is technically a benefactor here, except for the viewer or the student-athlete, the bad thing keeps happening, and that's why I don't see this changing anytime soon. Because you – I mean, that's just – it's a meritocracy. That's how capitalism works. They're not going to change this because of a moral objection. And while the inventory suffers in terms of quality, it does not matter that less people watch Alabama beat up on Akron, because those are all sold. Think of it as like a giant bond or security package. The bad stuff is sold with the good stuff, right? You ever seen The Big Short? Same concept. They're rolling all that in together, and they're operating in terms of scale, which is a fancy way of saying more is better.
Any issue on the way out? Paul and I were discussing the onside kick going away in the NFL. Before or against this idea of 4th and 15 instead of the onside kick attempt?
I'd be fine with it. I mean, if I love a good onside kick. I mean, obviously, there's a lot of great, you know, stories throughout NFL and college football about great onside kicks, and I can definitely think of some off the top of my head. But if you can show me an independent analysis that's certified independent of the leagues that it's safer or better for the athlete, then yeah, let's do it. I know this. I know that. Every coach I talk to worries about this idea of playing your best guys on special teams because they've seen a higher percentage likelihood of injuring starters. So, and I think
that's
that holds true
point.
In the league. I mean, if we have to, what are we sacrificing here? I mean, how much do we care about these isolated moments on special teams if it means, I mean, professionally, we're talking about moving towards even more regular season games. Collegiately, they will follow. They will try to and add probably one or two more. So if you just stretch that out on the aggregate, you're trying to keep your ones and twos healthier. So if special teams is less of a factor, I really like the XFL kickoff, by the way. I thought that that kept the spirit of the concept of the kickoff and greatly reduced injury on the Gunners.
Does that have any bearing, though, what they do on onsides? I can't remember it being anything.
I can't remember. You know, to be honest, I probably watched four games, Paul. I don't know if they were allowed to. I'd have to check.
I don't know. The AAF did the 4th and 12 instead of the onside kick, but I don't know what the XFL did.
I know analytics guys tell me all the time that they're constantly pushing for more fourth down conversions anyway, and that the rate of success is always higher than conventional wisdom would tell you, and that's at every level of football all the way down to high school. Like Kevin Kelly, the guy in Arkansas who never punts. Like,
yeah.
I think more fourth down attempts on offense, and also I think changing your philosophical mindset of what you're doing inside the opponent's 45 is going to evolve. That's just the direction we're headed. Like, I think you're starting to see that more in the pros. You've definitely seen it more in like certain programs. Big 12 comes to mind. So I think more fourth down conversions is fine.
But Kelly, Coach Kelly, and I had the opportunity to call his game this past season against Ravenwood. He also goes onside kick every single time. He onside kicks as well as he goes for it on fourth down. And he says he needs two of those recoveries or conversions, and that completely swings the game. So he gets one onside kick and one fourth down conversion or two fourth down conversions and no onside, completely swings the game in his favor.
Definitely going to change the – I mean, let's be honest here. So let's go back to it, though. Like, it's going to change the game. Onside kicks are exciting. They're dramatic. Oftentimes, they're just sort of weird.
Yeah.
They don't result in what you intended to do. The rate of success is so much lower. Like,
very
what are
low.
You? So if you're 50-50 on a fade pass inside the 15, that's conventional logic, right? On a one-on-one man assignment, onside kicks rate of success has got to be under 10%.
Okay. No, it's around 8%.
Okay. So if we take that out, yes, it's going to affect football strategy. But again, how much less are we talking about in terms of injury? You know, I'm curious if the PA would get involved on the pro level. Collegiately, they don't have that kind of voice. But I do think that most coaches would cotton towards this, any kind of sensibility that protects their starters or their twos over the course of a long season, especially defending an onside kick.
Always great to see you, man. Banner Society, at 38 Godfrey on Twitter. And, of course, podcast ain't played nobody. Have a good long weekend, man.
I shall. Same to y'all. See you next week.
Stephen Godfrey with us each week here on the Midday 180. Coming up, Clay Travis joins us. The topic he was discussing earlier today was about if NFL teams are only allowed 25% of their stadium, how do you determine the 25% that get in if your season ticket base is much larger than the 25% seats that will be filled on those days spread across the stadium? I'm curious about this too, and his theories are, of course, back to dollars and cents. Midday 180, queued up by Ellie's Barbecue, 104.5 The Zone.